Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Tane Altman and the Oregon Ducks men's basketball program had a great week. Beat UCLA, beat USC. Kelly Graves, he may have gotten the middle finger during the Arizona game, but he got the win. He also beat UConn in a big matchup yesterday. Here to talk about it all, Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports. Nobody had a better week than your basketball programs, Matt.
Boy, yeah, What a weekend. I mean, I don't think you could say with a straight face that there's another school in the country that had as good of a weekend as Oregon did. And I dare anyone to find me a team back in the history books that beat four top 10 teams in a 5-day span across men's and women's basketball. Pretty nuts. Pretty crazy.
Tell us, you know, what went right in last week playing UCLA and USC, two top 10 programs. Dana Altman got wins in both games. What do you see that's different on the court?
First and foremost, this team is playing more connected on defense. They talked about that at Oregon State, and then it really showed up, I felt like, in the two other road games down in L.A. They're communicating. They're defending the rim. Dante and Kepnog together are blocking shots now. And that's something that they just did not have this season for. And then offensively, there's a couple things. First and foremost, Will Richardson is playing like the all-league selection that he was picked to be at the beginning of the year. It's taken him some time to adjust to being the alpha of this team because in his career, he's played under Pritchard for two. He played behind Chris Duarte and Eugene Amarui last season. And this year he was looked at as the number one guy. And it took him some time to adjust to that. And he started to play that way, career high 28 at USC. And then I don't think Nfali Dante's play gets enough recognition. He's averaging over 10 points a game in the last four games. He's shooting above 80% from the field. His only miss against USC was an 18-footer when a guard gave him the ball with like 1.5 seconds left on the shot clock with like 4 minutes to go in the game. You know, he hadn't missed prior to that. And then more importantly, he's averaging close to a block a game and he's getting almost 9 rebounds per game. That is essentially a double-double. And when Oregon's biggest issue at the beginning of the year was when they couldn't score, they didn't have any offense, they didn't have anything to go to. And now with Dante, they legitimately have a back-to-the-basket guy that when he gets into the paint, he's going to score. Like there hasn't been anyone in the league that's shown the ability to shut him down.
We're talking to Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports, covers the Oregon Ducks. The hole that they dug in the early part of the season, do the events of the last couple of weeks, because it's not just one week for Oregon men's basketball, but do the events of the last couple of weeks change the narrative or does it put him in position? Where do they stand right now in your eyes as far as the NCAA tournament is concerned?
Yeah, just big, you know, just from an attention standpoint, John, I was really excited to go to the Washington State game on Thursday, and it's unfortunately been postponed due to COVID protocols within the Cougars team, because Matt Natarina this season has been very tame, has been very sterile. There hasn't been much of an atmosphere because aside from the first two games of the season, when it was raucous, there hasn't really been much for this fan base to root for in these games. They've been sloppy. They've lost at home a couple of times this year already. And they've really struggled to gain that traction with its fan base. So I was excited to see what Thursday night would look like. I would think there'd be a bigger crowd than normal, a more into crowd than normal. We'll have to see what it's like on Sunday now. But to your question, it puts them back into the discussion. The Arizona State loss is a quad three loss, and it came at home. So that is going to be a very big blemish on their schedule. And then I think you look at their non-con, and it's tough, okay? They played the defending champs, Baylor. They've got a game against BYU, who looks like a tournament team. They play Houston, who's a tournament team, a top 10 team. St. Mary's is a team that's going to be in that discussion as an at-large NCAA tournament team from the WCC. But the issue is how does the committee look at those games? Because they led for 30 minutes against Baylor, but they end up losing by 8. And the lead almost went to 20 at one point in that game late. BYU and Houston, they blew the doors off Oregon. They lost by 30 to both of those teams. And then St. Mary's lost by 12. So they played a tough schedule, but up until this past weekend, they hadn't been competitive with any team that's a tournament team. And does the tournament committee look at this and say, hey, this is a team that needed a couple weeks. Maybe they had a couple bumps and bruises. They did, which they did. Eric Williams getting hurt in the month of December was impactful. They dealt with a COVID pause, new roster. Maybe this is just a typical adjustment. They played a difficult schedule early on. They play these games now and they're not as bad. Or they look at it and say, hey, like, you played good teams and you weren't competitive. And so we're going to put you in the tournament, but we're not going to give you a high seed.
I kind of think the second, but a lot to be determined is, you know, there are like, you know, we got 7 weeks here, 14 games that are at least scheduled in theory, plus a conference tournament. There's a lot of opportunity to shift the narrative. And if they play the way they did in the last couple of weeks, I think it's going to be hard to keep them out.
Yeah. If I'm Oregon, I think they're going to be in a good spot. They're a name brand. They tend to get the benefit of the doubt when it comes to the tournament. We've seen that multiple times. Those two wins in L.A. are going to be pivotal. If they can get another one or two against USC, UCLA, and then Arizona, they play those teams three times combined, two at home, one on the road. If they can go 2-1 on those three games, that should put them, I think, safely into the tournament, and then it becomes a seeding thing. And I'm with you, John. I think they're going to get in. And depending upon how this plays out, they're probably going to be one of the teams in the tournament where a 5 seed or a 6 seed or maybe it's a 2 seed gets extremely upset at the fact that Oregon is in their bracket as a 12, an 11, a 7, or a 10 seed because they're properly seeded by the committee's terms, but they're not the – they are way better and from a talent standpoint than what that seed typically will present. And it's going to be another classic situation where we could see an Oregon team going into the tournament with a double digit seed and being a favorite to make a run. If I'm Oregon, just big picture and you're looking at this, I want to see if I can play up to being a 5 seed or a 4 seed, or I want to kind of hover in that 5 and 11 seed range. I want to avoid being a 7-10 or an 8-9 matchup if you can, because that eliminates playing a 1 or 2 seed in the second round. Get to the Sweet 16 and face them where you have some time to prepare.
Matt Prame, 24/7 Sports, is with us. Matt, before I pivot to the women's games, on the men's side as well, an email going out from one of the vice VPs at Oregon on the academic side, on the faculty side, saying, hey, the men's basketball graduation rate is an area of concern. Oregon had the lowest grad rate on the men's side, just 29%, UCLA at 43%, everybody else in the conference above 70%. How do you explain to the academics that graduation rate, while it is important if kids are staying in school, is a wonky thing when you've got one and dones and you've got major college basketball involved?
Yeah, this is where the blending of student athletes kind of gets into some strange discussions, because unlike football, where it's a developmental sport and guys, they literally have no choice but to be on campus for 3 years. And as we saw with Travis Dye most recently, and multiple other running guys at Oregon for the football team, you can graduate college in 3 years when you're on the athletic plan, where you're in school year round and you're taking classes nonstop. You can get done with your academics in 3 years. Kayvon Thibodeau is another one that did that. Basketball is a whole nother beast. I mean, we've got guys coming to college, whether it's at Oregon or other places, where their idea is, I just need to be on campus for 8 months because that's what's required of me to get to the NBA. And then they go off and they're one and done. Oregon is also on the flip side, where they've recently shifted and have brought in quite a few grad transfers. Jacob Young is one on this year's team. You know, last year there were more than a couple. The year before that, much of the same. And so I will admit, I don't know, John, if the APR factors in guys that get their, you know, graduate degrees into those factors. But more often than not, I can't think of a time where Oregon has had multiple guys in one season go 4 years at Oregon and get an opportunity to graduate, you know, from school. It's a weird deal in sports from a basketball standpoint, because there are schools that, like, I think Oregon State is one that they continually have guys stay all 4 years and they end up graduating. And, you know, Oregon hasn't had a guy when they're at school for basketball become academically ineligible. That's never happened. I can't recall a single player in the 12 years I've covered Dana Altman where that's happened. They just haven't had a high graduation rate because guys aren't staying all 4 years of college.
Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports, is with us. The women, Kelly Graves, getting it done. First of all, what happened in the Arizona game? Big dust up. He gets the middle finger. Then he goes and beats UConn as an encore.
Yeah, apparently Arizona's side feels like there were some things coming from the Oregon bench that were inappropriate or uncalled for. And I kind of want to believe it, because in today's day and age, my wife and I were actually talking about this yesterday because she even saw it, what was being discussed, and wanted to know about it. And I told her that in today's day and age, where the camera on your phone can pick up anything, we've got microphones all over the place, we've got TV there. If something from the Oregon bench was so darn right vulgar that requires a player on Arizona's bench to go out and say nasty things were said to them and whatnot, and that you could hear it on the court while they were playing, someone else would have heard it. Someone else would have reacted just naturally. Throw out your biases from who you're rooting for. Someone would have heard that. I would hope, and so I don't know. I didn't like the fact that Adia Barnes came out and said that they got homered. Well, they were down they were up 17 points with 12 minutes to go in the game as a top five program against an unranked opponent at the time. That's more on you than ref homering. And the officials certainly called plenty of fouls in that game, but a lot of that happened early on in the first half, and the fouls didn't really get Oregon free throw opportunities or extra possessions late in the game to allow them to come back. That was more Oregon doing its work. So that in and of itself is going to be interesting. Can't wait until they play at Arizona in like 2 weeks. That's going to be fun.
I love the drama of it. But then, you know, even though UConn was shorthanded, pretty convincing statement by Oregon.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems silly to say, but it might just be as simple as this Oregon women's team is finally healthy. And not only are they healthy, it's now games 2, 3, and 4 where they're all on the court together being able to play. Yeah. And it gives you a big brand win. UConn, you know, resonates anywhere you go when you talk basketball. It doesn't matter men or women. You talk UConn basketball, people are going to instantly think of the women first. So that's huge. But then, yeah, they were shorthanded. Their starting guard was out with COVID protocols. They had a couple of other players out. Paige Bucker's the best player in the country, was out. But Oregon steamrolled them, you know, by 20 points for most of the game. And Tahina Paopao, boy, she is special. I don't want to get too excited about her, but you just see the potential in her. And Kelly Graves' history with guards, with Sabrina Vandersloot at Gonzaga, and you just wonder, is Tahina Paopao going to be – she's only a sophomore. Is she going to be the next one where we're looking at a top five or a top 10 WNBA draft pick?
Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports. Yeah, Kelly Graves had been on the show last week, and he sort of talked about, like, it wasn't that they hadn't had his best three players in a game together. He had struggled to get them in a practice together to be able to play games. So they have some continuity. I feel like because of that, we could have a really wild finish to this Pac-12 season, both on the men's and women's side, because I think you're seeing the men's programs all sort of, come together a little bit. Even Oregon State, though they're not getting the result, they're playing better basketball now than they were early in the year. I think there's, everybody's starting to get some rhythm now. I think it's going to be fun to see what happens. Matt, thanks for joining us. I appreciate you, man.
Absolutely. You have a good day.
There's Matt Prehm, 24/7 Sports, laying it down. Coming up, our big splash, the one thing you need to know today. Leave it here. Some updates in the NFL world. Jimmy Garoppolo, 49ers quarterback, has a slightly sprained shoulder per the team. Keep an eye on that. The Raiders have fired their GM. Mike Mayock is out after three seasons. Matthew Stafford won his first playoff game as the Rams rolled yesterday over the Cardinals. A little bit of hot seat action for Cliff Kingsbury in Arizona. I don't think he's in any jeopardy of being fired unless something goes sideways. Meanwhile, the Steelers, Mike Tomlin saying all options are on the table for the next Steelers quarterback. Aaron Rodgers and the Packers tiptoeing towards the NFC matchup with the Niners. I think it's going to be an interesting debate to see what happens kind of with the world of vaccinating, non-vaccinating, all that debate stuff. If Aaron Rodgers is in the Super Bowl with the Packers, will America root for him? Do you think America will root for Aaron Rodgers? Or they root against Aaron Rodgers? Or will that be a divisive game if the Packers are in the Super Bowl and Aaron Rodgers is at quarterback?
That's a really tough question. I think the wrong people might cheer for Aaron Rodgers. If you remember the Atlanta-New England Super Bowl, everyone who was against Trump was rooting very hard for Atlanta because Belichick and Brady supposedly had a relationship with Trump. And that's kind of, if I'm friends with a friend, you shouldn't hate that other friend, but that's how it works. So I think people will cheer for and against them.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because I don't want that. I don't want the Super Bowl to become about that, but often the Super Bowl becomes about so much more than the game itself. This leads us to our big splash. It's the one thing that you need to know.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.